Louder? There we go. Now you can hear me. So I'll reintroduce myself. I'm Tristan Davis, a group program manager of the Office Extensibility team back at Microsoft. This is Rob Howard, director of the product marketing team who works with me on Office ecosystem stuff. We're both super excited to be here and show you the roadmap for the future of Office and SharePoint development. So we'll jump right in. So kind of our big objective for today is to give you guys a little bit of an evolution of the platform. I'm sure some of you have seen before kind of the evolution of us moving from a really calm Windows 32-based extensibility model to a more broad standards and web extensibility model, but kind of walk through that evolution, show you a breadth of capabilities. So we've just got a ton of demos to show you today with the goal of getting you excited to go to the deep sessions that'll happen all week long. So my team, folks on Rob's team, we've got a lot of awesome sessions that'll really drill into a bunch of the stuff you see us touch on today. We're going to touch on them as we go through, but I really encourage you to go to those sessions to learn more about the stuff I'm going to touch on in this hour. Big takeaways, you'll kind of see them as we go through, kind of three pillars of Office, right? It's making your solution a native part of the apps using standard web technologies. It's about building smarter web and device apps using by connecting to Office services and using the data intelligence up in our cloud. And it's about creating the next generation of productivity solutions. And you'll see more what that means as we go through.
So when we talk about, can you guys hear me okay? Awesome, perfect. So when we talk about the sort of Office ecosystem and the new Office ecosystem in particular, we like to talk about it in the context of both the changing nature of Office as a set of apps and services, but also the changing nature of productivity, which if you think about it, has changed pretty dramatically over the last several decades from this world where you're a single individual on a disconnected machine editing one file with one application, to a world where those applications are connected to servers and you're starting to create business processes across those applications. And now the world of devices in the cloud, where there are more devices than people, you've got more data than you know what to do with, you can access that data from anywhere in the cloud, you've got a bunch of emerging intelligence to start to make sense of that data. And if you think about Office as just a set of apps and services, over that time period, it's really evolved pretty dramatically. You've now got Office on your phone and Office in the cloud. You've got services like Delve and My Analytics that take that intelligence and really harness it to make you more productive. But at the same time, we have kind of always thought about Office as a platform. Even if you think about the very early days of Excel with stuff like Excel Form Macros and VBA, you've always kind of been able to take a little bit of code and the Office functionality and put them together to really create a tailored solution that helps people get their jobs done. The nature of development, though, has changed pretty dramatically over the last several years, too. If you think about the world of just writing VBA script inside of Excel, and you think about the world of, you know, iOS and Android devices and cloud services and Node.js, it couldn't be really more different. And so we've taken a step back and we've really kind of re-engineered and re-envisioned the Office platform in order to make Office functionality relevant to developers in this new cloud and mobile world. What does that look like? So in the kind of legacy model, the way you extended Office was you took these very specifically shaped holes we left in our applications inside of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, SharePoint, and you created code that fit that shape exactly. It ran on our technologies, it ran within our processes, you had to run in the context of our applications. And then you were able to run on the platforms where we ran, and in particular that was on Windows. And as we moved to this sort of cloud and device model where Office runs in all those different places, that just didn't make sense. And as people adopted technologies beyond just sort of Windows code, that didn't make sense. So we've really kind of reimagined the way that an Office solution looks, starting with that centerpiece, which is your code. We want you to be able to choose whatever cloud platform, whatever code, whatever technology you'd like to implement your business application. If you want to choose AWS and you want to write your code in Ruby, we want you to be able to integrate with Office. Even better, if you choose Azure or you choose .NET, we want you to be able to integrate with Office. So it's your choice where you write that code and what you write it on, and we still want you to be able to take advantage of the full breadth of the Office platform. Across the top, you'll see a bunch of different icons, and for us, that's the context that your application runs in. So if your application has something to do with something an end user is already doing inside of Excel, or something to do with what they're doing inside of Outlook, if it's helping them schedule a meeting or helping them interpret an email or understand who a contact is, you want it to run in that context to understand Outlook and to understand what's going on there. And again, regardless of what technology you're choosing, we want you to be able to choose any of those contexts, to be running inside of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, SharePoint. We also want you to be able to choose standalone applications. If it doesn't make sense for your application to run inside of Excel, we still want you to be able to take advantage of Office functionality and create a standalone web or device application. On the bottom, you'll see a bunch of services. What we've done there is we've taken the functionality of Office and we've really decoupled it from the apps. We've made it available as web services that you can consume from your app, again, regardless of where you're building. Some of those are things you would traditionally think of as services. So things like your cloud files or your calendar or your mail. People think of course, there's a REST service that I can go and connect to go get that out of Office 365. But some of those things are actually more kind of Office client pieces of functionality. You might think of them that way. Things like spreadsheet services or our Excel REST services let you take advantage of the functionality of Excel even when you're building a standalone web app or a device app that's not actually running in the context of Excel or connecting to an Excel DLL directly. So it's really a big, dramatic shift in the solution model. And as we work on building out the capabilities of this new model, there are kind of two important imperatives, kind of two ways we think about the scenarios. And the first is we want to bring all of those existing extensibility scenarios, the cases where you were really extending Office, you were writing a VSTO or a COM add-in or writing a VBA macro, we want to bring these into the modern world. We want you to be able to build your solution directly into the Office clients, but with modern productivity tools, with modern development technologies, with open web technologies. And we want you to be able to run everywhere that Office runs, not just on Windows, Office on Windows, but also Office on Mac, Office on online in the browser, Office on the iPad. So that's one big imperative for us. And we've made a lot of progress on that over the last year in particular. And you'll see a bunch of announcements today are directly about that, making the new platform more capable to target those existing scenarios. The second is enabling a bunch of new scenarios that really weren't possible before because of things like the cloud, like mobile, like intelligence, like the understanding of natural language lets us do a bunch of really cool things we've never been able to do before. And some of that is just connecting to our data and the intelligence that's available in the Office cloud. Understanding whether a user is busy or who their manager is helps you build more intelligent, more contextually aware applications. We also want to let you take advantage of new kind of paradigms in productivity. You may have heard about things like conversations as a platform. You probably heard a lot about bots and things like that in productivity scenarios. So we have a lot of services, we have a lot of technologies and libraries that we want to start to enable these sorts of productivity scenarios too, and we kind of put that in that same class of net new scenarios. So when you think about the things that we actually want you to go build on the Office platform, we kind of put them into three buckets. And the first is that kind of traditional scenario of extending an Office application with your own custom experience. So add-ins and web parts are all about making your solution a native part of the modern Office, meaning Office everywhere that Office runs. And we have a bunch of announcements around that. The rest of the talk is kind of organized around these three pillars, and we'll dive into each one. The second one is building your own standalone web and device applications and connecting to Office services in order to make them smarter, in order to understand that context and that intelligence that's inside of Office and make them more intelligent as a result. That's where we'll talk about things like the Microsoft Graph, and we'll dive into a bunch of announcements around that. So I trip over my bag. And then the last is this kind of new class of productivity applications, things like voice and video embedded in your custom applications, connectors that allow you to have conversations around arbitrary data, and bots, which allow you to do kind of really cool scenarios that feel like kind of next generation productivity. So we're going to dive now into add-ins and web parts, and I'm going to hand it over to Tristan to do that.
Great. So as Rob said, sort of the first of the three pillars we'll talk about today are add-ins and web parts, and how to make solutions that really feel like a native part of the modern Office experience. So there's really three big components there. We'll kind of talk about each one quickly in turn, and then we'll get into some fun demos. The first one is about letting you build those native experiences using web tech. Right, like we're really cognizant of the fact that in the old world, we asked you to kind of morph to using a specific set of tools that we built if you wanted to extend Office or SharePoint. In the modern world, if I want to go throw some buttons up on the ribbon like you see up there in Outlook, it's just a little bit of XML that tells Office, hey, this is how I want you to extend your UI. Right? There's really just this concept of a manifest where you're saying, I've got my own web page, I've got my own experience, here's how Office should integrate it into its experience. And then the other two pieces are just your own website. Right? All Office extensions are just a web app that you're building using whatever web tech you choose. And then a JavaScript library that says, hey, that web app, I want it to talk to Office. Maybe I want it to talk to Excel or to Word or to SharePoint. Here's a JavaScript library that lets you have that interaction with that host that you're choosing. So that you can take all those standard web technologies and you can integrate them everywhere Office runs. So you've seen already with add-ins, for example, in the client, You can go build an add-in for Word that runs on the Win32 version of Word, in Word Online in the browser, Word for Mac, Word for iPad, soon to be, you know, the other couple platforms, iPhone, Android, and UWP. But we've already been able to take a solution and run it across a bunch of user contexts rather than having an add-in tied to a specific instance of Office on a specific platform. And the last one, and the one that I'm sure for many of you is pretty familiar, is really trying to modernize the deployment and distribution experience. So if you've built a VSTO or COM add-in, and you've talked to me, probably one of the biggest complaints you've given me is, man, it's really hard to deploy that thing. Right? Like, I got to go bundle it up as an MSI, push it out to a bunch of desktops. There's like that 2% of machines that it fails inexplicably, and then I'm running around trying to figure out how to get that fixed. What you'll see, and we'll go through it in the demos, is we're really trying to make that as zero touch as we possibly can. So with the Office 365 organizational catalog, for example, you'll be able to take an add-in and say, hey, here's this add-in I've built for Excel. I want to provision it to this set of users or perhaps to this Outlook group. And automatically, when the user signs into Office, they get all the add-ins you've entitled them to without them having to do a separate MSI running on their desktop step. All that just roams with their profile. So as soon as they're logged into Office, they have all the extensions you need them to have to do their work. So with that, we'll go through kind of a list of announcements, kind of the specific stuff that we're talking about, which I think is really kind of an exciting extension of all the cool stuff we've been doing the last couple of years. So, support and more Office applications. Some of you may have seen, but a couple weeks ago, we announced general availability of add-in support in OneNote Online. So OneNote joins the family of Office applications in which you can run these web add-ins, which is really, really cool, starting with OneNote Online. We've also announced, and we'll spend a bunch of time on this because it's a really big deal, a preview of the modern SharePoint framework. And specifically, we'll talk about client-side web parts and all the sort of cool stuff you can do now in the modern SharePoint to extend that UI with your own web parts and extensibility pieces. In terms of running everywhere Office runs, next month you'll see us do a preview of add-in support in Outlook for Mac. So we already have a certain amount of extensibility from the web model in Outlook for Mac. Some of you have come and asked me questions like, hey, how do I do compose add-ins? Or, hey, the APIs aren't perfectly symmetrical between Win32, OWA, and Mac. We'll be solving all of those and giving you complete web add-in support in Outlook for Mac, starting with a preview next month, which is pretty awesome. In terms of native UX integration, we'll also be showing in Mac a preview of ribbon extensibility. So your add-ins will run and be able to extend the ribbon with the exact same manifest format that you're used to in Outlook for the web or Outlook for Windows. We've also announced a general availability of first run callouts for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And let me explain what this is really quick. One of the things we've seen is when a user gets a new add-in, right? Usually it extends the ribbon. You might add a new tab or you might add a new chunk in an existing tab. But then there's the challenge of how do you tell them where it is? Like, how do you get them over the hump of, hey, I added a button to the ribbon. There are already a lot of buttons on the ribbon. So what our manifest format now lets you do is, as part of install, you can say, hey, I want to give the user a message about how to get started, and then we'll anchor it to the specific place you choose. So if I go add a button to the formulas tab in Excel, I can go add to the manifest format, hey, here's a first run message I think is important for the user to see, and when they install that add-in or when they get it for the first time, we will take them to the tab where you've put your buttons and we'll anchor that call out that says, hey, welcome to Tristan's add-in, here's what it does, and here's how to get started. Really getting them over the hump of, here's how that add-in fits into Excel or Word or PowerPoint, and here's how you can get it to be part of your workflow. Obviously, we're continuing to deepen our API coverage. Just this week, we're gonna have a general availability of the 1.1 and 1.2 APIs for Word in Word Online, which is really awesome. That brings Word to full parity across PC, Mac, and browser. We're also announcing a preview of a new set of Excel APIs, our 1.3 requirements set in Windows and in Excel Online. And then next month, the Mailbox APIs 1.4 in Outlook will be going to preview as well, which will add some new capabilities that you can do in Outlook. So you'll kind of see this in a demo in a little bit, but we're really constantly looking to improve that API surface, add things to it, largely based on the feedback you're giving me and my team about what you want to see, what you want to do with those APIs. And last but not least, in terms of deployment and acquisition, we've made a bunch of improvements to the in-client store. So if you've been using the in-client store in Word, Excel, PowerPoint, or Outlook, you're constantly seeing us dribble in new improvements based on user telemetry, trying to make it easier and easier for users to acquire extensibility, to acquire those add-ins into the apps. We're going to have a preview of what we're calling deep linking support. So that'll be, hey, if I'm an ISV and I want to sell my add-ins through our store. We're going to make it really easy for the user to get a link from you or from whoever provides that add-in that then bootstraps them right into the app to get them started. And then we're going to continue to enhance that preview of admin deployment. So we announced this at Build in the spring. We've done a bunch of work based on feedback we've gotten from you guys to make it more robust and more powerful. So there's a very significantly updated preview of that experience, and we hope to bring that to GA pretty darn soon. So
we thought we'd dive in a little bit on the SharePoint framework and talk specifically about client-side web parts. For those of you guys who didn't see the announcement, we're basically taking the existing capability to go create web parts, and we're updating it in the same way we've updated a bunch of Office extensibility, and that we're bringing it to the modern web. We're letting you create really fast, really responsive, really modern experiences in web parts and in SharePoint pages, and use modern technologies to do it. So it's integrated directly with open source JavaScript frameworks. Things like React and Angular and Knockout are easily usable. It's exactly intended for you to take advantage of those to create really slick experiences. It's very simple to build and deploy. It's optimized exactly for being able to deploy across a tenant and take that code and reuse it in all of the different SharePoint pages that end users want to include your web part in. And as we complete the preview, as we move towards GA, you'll see we'll add more and more ways to seamlessly access data, not just in SharePoint, which you can already do through the framework, but also in the rest of Office 365 through the Microsoft Graph by kind of natively connecting the SharePoint framework to that data. We're also working on getting that down the road to release. So we had some early kind of invite-only dev kitchens where we got a lot of feedback. We did a lot of iterations, fixed a lot of bugs. We did a preview, an initial public release last month, and we've gotten a lot of feedback from then. We've had a ton of attention on the open source repo where both the documentation and some components of the framework are available. We've had a bunch of issues filed there, and we're working towards a full production release this fall so that you can use these client web parts in your own applications in production. So we're going to, with that, jump off and start the first demo. And each one of these demos is going to be kind of a bite-sized demo where it's about 2 or 3 minutes just to kind of whet your appetite. And then you'll see a slide where we'll say, here are all the sessions to go see for the rest of the week in order to go learn all the details. So we're going to start with client-side web parts. I think I'm on 6. Oh, you can see Windows Hello. There you go. So I'm actually starting in the SharePoint Workbench, which is a really cool new capability of the framework. It's part of the tools and the tool chain of the framework. You'll actually see, if you can see, probably not in the back, you can see that the URL is actually a local URL. This is my local machine, R. Howard Surface. I'm actually developing locally against it. I don't have to have the 16 gigabyte typical SharePoint development machine to install SharePoint. I'm actually just running a local server on Node.js that is able to host web parts and let me develop them in a really iterative way. So what I'm going to do first here is just add a web part that I've already kind of started. I'm going to add this facilities web part. And what this facilities web part is doing is it's going and hitting a web service that has a list of facilities for my company, and it's using a React template in order to render that just in a really, really simple list. And I'm going to switch over to Visual Studio Code. You kind of have your choice of the code editor that you use when you use these open source frameworks. You can, of course, use things like Visual Studio, but you can also use Visual Studio Code, Sublime. In this case, I'm a really big fan of Visual Studio Code, and I'm going to use that. I'm in a JSX template file, so this is a React file for creating the rendering of this web part. And you'll see a couple of things that I want to point out that I think are really exciting about the SharePoint framework here. One is that we're using TypeScript, so rather than having these kind of sprawling, hard-to-manage JavaScript applications, I have a bunch of the protections that I'm kind of used to in .NET code. I can create classes, I can create interfaces, I get the sort of build-time validation that I expect from creating an enterprise application. The second is, you'll see in the imports here, there are a bunch of names of components. We're not doing this thing that we kind of did really at the beginning of the kind of SharePoint add-in world where we said, hey, we're going to give you a bunch of data and APIs and auth, but it's up to you to figure out the UX on your own. We're actually delivering some full-featured components to you. In this case, these are Office UI Fabric React components, and they are complete working components that you can embed in your application in a really fluent way. You'll see things like I'm importing a button, details list, document card, link, image. There's a long list of these components, and you can compose your applications really quickly and easily from them. And then I'll move down here to the render. This is actually the JSX template that's describing to SharePoint and to React in particular how to take the data that it's pulled and how to render out using this template the set of rows in the table that will represent those facilities. I'm actually just going to take this slightly longer rendering method, and I'll walk you through a couple pieces of it here in just a second. And I'm going to paste that in. And I want to point out just a couple of things about it. One is, you'll see that a lot of it is similar. I've got the divs, I've got that same data binding, but you'll see directly in line these components, like a command bar as a component. How cool is that, that I've got a purpose-built component I can just embed? It's got all of the behaviors that Office 365 has. In fact, it's the same code that we use in OneDrive and Outlook Web Access to create a command bar. You're using that in your own applications. I've got a details list, which is a fully built, fully featured, really first-class component for drawing a list of items, and you can see the data-bound columns. I've got the document card, which is a details view. It's the same thing we use in OneDrive for Business in order to render the previews of documents, and you're now able to use those directly in your application. And when I hit save, one of the really cool things is that we're using Gulp Serve in order to not only build and start the web server here, but we're actually watching that directory and we're able to automatically refresh it so that when I go back to my workbench, you can see that my rendering is automatically refreshed. I didn't have to rebuild or do anything like that. And if I select one of these, you'll see not only do I have this full featured list that is data bound and rendered there, I've got my command bar with lists and map options, and I got a document card that's data bound to the URL or data bound to the image from that facility. So you see, you can create some really powerful capabilities with not much code. You saw all the code that I pasted in there for the rendering. I'm leveraging all of the code that we've built and we've used in OneDrive for Business and Outlook Web Access in order to create these really capable lists, in order to create these command bars. So I think it's really powerful, and I definitely encourage you guys to take a look. Give us feedback as we continue working on the SharePoint framework. There's a lot of sessions throughout the week, and start to give us feedback as we work towards general availability for this one. I'm going to hand it over to Tristan, and Tristan's going to look at one of the add-ins in Office called Excel Stat that's traditionally built a COM add-in, and they're actually working on building an add-in in the new model, and Tristan's going to walk through that.
Great. So as Rob mentioned, I don't know how many are familiar with Excel Stat. They build an incredibly awesome add-in for Excel Desktop, right? So they have this COM add-in that they've built that lets you run really complex statistical models on the data that's out there in Excel. So they've been working on the new model for a while, and I kind of want to show you what that looks like and how they've managed to not just bring their solution cross-platform, but actually take advantage of the fact that it's a web-based model to do some pretty cool stuff. So here I am in Excel Online. You can see I've got a bunch of data up here in the browser. I'm running a shoe store. I want to know if there's some more data I can get about how the characteristics of the users that come and hit my shoe store affect the time they spend on the site. So I'm going to go up here in the add-ins thing. And what you'll see is this is our Office Store. I'm going to go grab the Excel Stat add-in from the Office Store. So you'll notice here there's already just a ton of add-ins that have been built that are available for you to grab and use today, but I'm going to choose the Excel Stat add-in here and add it. And what it's going to do is, as you can see, it's going to choose to add a whole new tab to the ribbon. So it's going to add a new tab called Excel Stat 365. It's going to give me a bunch of the models. They've got three models so far today, but they're constantly adding new ones. And give me all the capabilities of that Excel Stat add-in right here inside of Excel Online in the browser. So in this case, let's try, maybe we'll do a linear regression. So I'm going to click up in here. I'm going to say linear regression. And then it's asking me how to do some specific things. So hey, I want to see, maybe, how does time on site, so we'll go and grab the time on site there, and say that's my dependent variable. And I want to know, how does height, shoe size, and weight affect your time on site? So I'll go and grab that data and say, hey, how do these variables affect that one? Maybe I want to do a little prediction, so I can say, hey, here's three more data points. What would the result of those data points be based on the model that gets built out of this stuff? And then I can come over here and I can choose to say, there's a ton of reports I can go and generate on that data, right? So what the Excel Stat guys have done, which is really cool, is they've taken advantage of the fact this is a web add-in to offload all of the processing of that model off of the client and up into the cloud. So they've actually taken those models and they don't anymore run them inside of Excel, which is awesome on a Win32 machine, but maybe not as awesome on an iPad or on a phone where you have battery life and I want to do as minimal processing there as I can. They push that data up to the cloud, up in Azure, they do the statistical calculations, and then as you see, they're able to push back a really rich set of results right back into there, into Excel. So you can see that what they chose to do was add a new worksheet and then pumped onto the worksheet text and tables and numbers, and if we scroll down a little further here, even charts. that represent sort of the analysis of all that data that happened, and that add-in now works across my PC, right here in the browser, on the Mac. I can run that on my iPad, so now I have access to all that statistical calculation across all those platforms, and I don't have to worry about how powerful my PC is, right? This was a pretty simple model. I had about 50 data points. You could imagine tens of thousands of data points. That model's now just calculated up in the cloud where I can scale out a heck of a lot better than I can on an individual computer. So in this case, you know, we ran that data and we can see here that there's positive correlation with height to the time on my site and negative correlation to weight. But if I go look up in here, and I'm not a statistician, so you can't hold me to the specific details here, but I can tell you that what this tells you is that the p-value for height is interesting, right? So that is actually a positive correlation between height and time on site, and the other two aren't as statistically significant. But a great example, and the thing you should take away that's really cool, is a great example of, hey, the web add-in model let these guys not just go cross-platform, they let them take advantage of cloud, and they let them do really rich interaction with the host, right? So this isn't an Excel add-in that's just reading some cells and writing some values. They're doing like charts and tables and all kinds of awesome stuff inside of Excel using this new model based on an old Win32 add-in that they already have today. So kind of jumping from there, we'll talk about two other things that I think are really interesting. So obviously a bunch of you probably have existing apps that you're looking at, hey, how would I migrate these forward to this new world, right? And the team is super cognizant of the fact that we need to help bootstrap that transition as much as we can. So we try to do that in a couple of different ways. And one of the things I think is really cool is that we actually have a bunch of design patterns that we ship. So I'm gonna show you a sample add-in that we built here on the team that we use every day, and then kind of show you the design patterns we've built that back it that you can actually use as you start building your own applications. So we've built what we call our Markdown Editor for Word. So as you'll see in a second, we do as much on GitHub as we possibly can as a team, right? Our specs are up there. All our documentation is on GitHub, but we still love Word, right? I still love editing in Word. It's familiar. It works great. Word's got awesome tools for writing. You know, I worked on the team for 12 years, a bunch of great stuff. So what we've done in the Markdown Editor for Word is it can go and connect to GitHub, right? So I've already done the authorization and stuff. It can list out all my repos, and what you'll see, just like Rob showed in the SharePoint WebPart demo, we've got a great pre-built list here. Sorry, I'll go back out to that so we can see it for a second. A great like navigation tool. It's showing me like a pre-built list of all the files and folders up in that repo. It's got pre-built drop-down lists and headings. We've got this concept of a command bar that I can go put commands on. So in this case, you know, I could go grab maybe a document from this Excel JS repo here. You know, I can go pull something for Excel. There we go. And what you'll see is it pulls all of that markdown content into Word. Now I can go and tinker it with it using Word and be super familiar. And when I'm done, I can go push it back to the repo and then, you know, go make a pull request to get my changes put into the formal docs. But the thing that's really interesting here is all those design patterns, right? You see buttons, you see navigation bars, you see drop-down lists. We've taken all of those and made them into components that you can go and grab and use. So if I go up here on dev.office.com, which is our developer portal, there we go. The internet's thinking. So while the internet thinks, what you'll see is dev.office.com/docs/add-ins. What we've done is we've built a huge list of design pattern templates that you can just go and grab and use. And these are all based on Office UI Fabric, which is our UX framework architecture that we've got published also in GitHub. And then I can go and see things like, hey, maybe I want the generic layout of an add-in that has kind of commands at the top and a branding bar at the bottom. Or maybe I want a first run experience that lets me put a couple of bullets to help the user get started. Each one of these things not only has a specification on GitHub that explains how it works and shows you some examples of it visually, it also has code, right? So I can go and say, hey, that seems great. I want to plug that into my own solution. Here's the HTML and CSS that you can just go and steal and use in your add-in without having to think about how do I lay that out exactly, and how did they do that, and trying to reverse engineer things that you see us do. So really a huge, rich repository of design patterns and samples to help bootstrap you to go really quick at building these add-ins based on patterns that we've established and patterns that we've seen that have been really successful with users in the past. So pretty cool stuff. Corollary to that, I'm gonna jump We also, like I said, we live on GitHub as a team, and we really feed off of you guys in the community telling us, hey, this is what we want you to build, right? Like, one of the things that we talk about on the team a lot is, I don't want to build an API unless I have a whole bunch of users really excited to use it, right? Because the whole point of an API is to enable you guys to build something really cool for me to see and geek out on and be really excited you can build on top of our applications. So what that means is, hey, this is the GitHub repo where we store our JavaScript documentation. And if you go up here on GitHub, you'll see literally every method, object, property, event of our object model documented. But we go even a step further, which is, if I look at this branch list, you can see master. Master is, hey, what's currently published in terms of API set. What I think is way more cool, way more fun is these open spec branches. So what are they? Every time the team says, I want to add a new API or I want to add a new set of APIs to the JavaScript framework, long before we code them, long before we ship them, we actually spec them in GitHub and make that public. So that at any point you can see, hey, what are these guys doing next about APIs for Excel? Or what are they doing next about APIs for Word? Or hey, are they doing more APIs around custom XML parts across the applications? That's all right there publicly documented on GitHub. And you can go up, you can go into this branch for Excel 1.3, which I just said earlier was in preview. You can see the exact set of API changes we're making. You can give us feedback on them, you can file issues, you can have conversations, and you're having those conversations with the program manager and the developer on the team who are gonna go and build those APIs. So you have a direct conduit to us to say, hey, I really need more APIs around, you know, pivot tables, or hey, if you're gonna do filtered views, I really need these kinds of methods on those filtered views. And that will directly feed into how we build it, what we ship, and what you get in terms of new APIs moving forward. So I think this is super awesome. It's really intended to give you guys a direct connection to my team so you can kind of tell us what we should go and build. I'd encourage you, if you haven't seen them already, head out to GitHub, take a look at what we're doing next, give us feedback, tell us what you like, tell us what you would like us to improve. We love to hear that kind of stuff, so the team really feeds on getting that interaction in terms of what APIs will help you guys move solutions forward. Cool. So that's kind of APIs and the visual framework and all that good stuff. The last thing I wanted to talk about was that centralized deployment and kind of show you why I think that's so exciting. So I'm gonna open another tab. So I'm gonna kind of show you two things. One, I'm gonna take an add-in that I've already built. I'm gonna deploy it to myself in Office and kind of show you how that zero-touch footprint deployment works. And then we'll go and see if that add-in's working, and if we need to, we can fix a bug or two in it to see how, when I need to update that solution, I can also do it with literally zero touch on the client desktops individually. So we'll log in here. I'm logging into just the standard Office 365 admin portal. There's nothing special about this, so. And what you'll see is in the modern O365 Admin Center, there's a spot where I can deploy solutions and add-ins. So if I expand this bar a little bit, I'm gonna click services and add-ins. You can see that right next to the place where I can turn on and off our first party services for users, there's a button that says upload add-in, right? And in this preview, I can now go and say, hey, I wanna deploy an add-in to my users. So let's go, I've got the manifest file for that. I happen to have already written it. So I can go grab that XML manifest. We're gonna do some quick checks on it to make sure it's valid and correct and all the right things will happen. And now you can see that, hey, this is a style checker add-in for Word provided by Contoso. And then I can go and say, who should have this? Maybe Tristan should have it. So I'll go and entitle Tristan and save. And now we're gonna go and write into Azure Active Directory and exchange all the data about, hey, here's the user, here's the add-in, here's that manifest. Associate Tristan's account with this specific add-in.
And you can do it not just by user, but also by any group inside of Azure Active Directory, including modern groups, and you can do it to your entire organization as well, so that the next time anybody from your org signs in, they're gonna have that add-in inside of Word.
Now what I'll do, so normally, the next time the user opened Word, that add-in would show up automatically. I can actually just force that to happen really quick. So I'll go on here and I'll say refresh. And what you'll see in that refresh, which happens automatically each time you boot Word and every 24 hours when you're using it, is there's the style checker add-in that's automatically shown up. So I'm gonna close this guy jump over to the Home tab, you will see, sorry, I didn't click the right button. So what you'll see is this guy is now going to extend the ribbon and is going to show up on that Home tab, right? So I didn't have to do any MSI deployment on the clients. There was no code. There was no going to SCCM and deploying an MSI. Just as part of knowing that this is Tristan D logged into this instance of Word, we found that right add-in and we got it set up for him automatically. If I now go play with what that add-in looks like, you know, let's go and load it up. You'll see that, again, it's using those design patterns we showed earlier, so it's teaching me how to use it. This is just a simple find and replace add-in. You'll notice, oh, I misspelled replace here, so we should probably fix that. That's probably not ideal in terms of letting users believe this is a quality add-in. And, you know, let's try replacing A with ZZZ and saying don't do that in the first paragraph. And we'll see, uh-oh, it did change it in the first paragraph, but it didn't do it in the second one, so there must be a difference between zero and one-based indexing. Shame on me. Let's see if we can fix that too. So let's close this guy down. And let's go fix those couple of bugs. So I have my command prompt up for my Node.js website that I built. I'm going to go, let's go fix those bugs in turn. First, we'll fix the string. I'll find and replace. So let's get rid of one of those E's. That looks a whole lot better, so we'll save that guy. And then we'll go into the JavaScript that goes with it. We'll say, hey, you should probably account for the fact that other than us programmers, no one really understands zero-based indexing. So we'll change that so that even though the user says one, we really know what that means and subtract one off of what they give me. So let's save that as well. And now what I can do is as simple as, for anyone who's familiar with Git, I can just say, hey, let's get those changes. Let's commit them. And then I'm going to publish that back. I'm using the Azure CLI tools here to just publish those changes right back up to the Azure website that's hosting my add-in. So we'll see that what'll happen is it will go and find my changes, it'll go and push them automatically for me up to Azure and update that website. And if I jump back here into Word, so deployment successful, awesome. So now let's boot up Word again. I didn't do anything to this client machine in order to get these things fixed. But we'll see that in a second, all that will work exactly as I intended. So there's the style checker showed up. We'll click the button. We'll skip through the get started. Oh, I did something wrong, okay. We'll force the refresh and see if that worked. All right, my push didn't work, but theoretically what you would have seen is that, hey, I didn't have to actually, I'm going to blame my own Git skills. Rob's giving me a look like you failed on the Git test.
Just hold my finger above the
yes,
E.
Yeah. Second E. Really what is happening here though, and what you'll see is that, hey, this is just a website, right? So as soon as I go back and change those things up in that Node.js web server, as soon as the users come into Word or Excel where those add-ins are running, those changes would have been reflected in the client automatically. So.
Awesome. So we saw a bunch of different demos, a smattering of things kind of all across that category. We wanted to give you a little bit of an idea about what to expect going forward. After all, this is a roadmap session. I'll give you a spoiler alert, and a lot of these roadmap things are going to be kind of more of the same. In particular, we're continuing to work on extensibility support in more Office apps. We've got it now in OneNote. We think that there's a bunch of other Office apps that people want to extend. I'm sure everybody's got one that they can name. That they think should be next, and we'd love to hear your feedback on that, but we are working to make sure that we cover everywhere people can build, for example, common VSTO add-ins and more as we go forward. We also want to add support for more platforms. Tristan mentioned we have coverage over quite a bit. Right now, we don't have coverage over Android and iPhone are the only two that we're missing, but we're certainly working on covering those as well, and in the future, we want to cover everywhere Office runs. We also think that there are more UX extension options. You know, getting things into the ribbon and covering context menus was really important. There's a lot of great stuff that you can enable, a lot of kind of key experiences, scenarios people have done for a long time that you enable by doing that. But there are a bunch of other places in the backstage, intercepting office commands and sort of overriding them. Those are things that we're looking at doing in the future as well. We'll continue with doing deeper APIs across those Office apps, and you can go and look at the GitHub repos, check out our open specs to see exactly what we're building. Give us your feedback, because that's exactly how we decide what we want to go build. If you've got something that you need in order to build your app, your add-in, please do let us know, and that will help us prioritize correctly. And then the last is, we really think it's important to really nail those deployment and management capabilities, especially when you get the Git commands right.
Yes.
But those are really, really important things for us to get right, and we think that that's a huge value add that the cloud and that web and these new technologies offer above sort of traditional client installs and the things you did with traditional add-ins. Also want to give you a view for this category of what are the sessions you should go see for the rest of the week, and I'll just go through really fast, but you can take a picture of this if you want. The slide deck's also got it in it. Tomorrow, there's a bunch of sessions on the SharePoint framework. There's an intro to the SharePoint framework, one that's a deep dive on building client-side web parts that Chucks is going to give. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's also a session on SharePoint development broadly, where we'll talk about the future and the roadmap there. On Wednesday, we're going to talk about a deep dive on Office add-ins, so we'll go even deeper than we went today in this last section on Office across all of those. And the next one will be on Outlook in particular. On Thursday, we'll talk about patterns and practices in the new SharePoint framework and how those two things will evolve together. We'll talk about management and deployment, a lot of the stuff around centralized deployment and deep linking on Thursday. We'll talk about Office migration, so if you've got add-ins and macros, how do you move to the latest version of Office? How do you move to Pro Plus and Evergreen versions of Office? We'll have a really cool session on the Office App Awards. We've got a bunch of ISVs who built App Awards over the last year, and on Thursday, we're going to give the awards out, and we'll also have the voting live for People's Choice Awards. So if you want to come and check out that session, you can see a bunch of the great Office apps that were built in the last year and vote for the ones that you'd like to win. And then on Friday, we've got a session on using OneNote add-ins, and then we've got a session on using or creating with the Project Portfolio Manager solution, creating custom solutions as well. All right, so that's the add-ins and web parts, and I think we've actually got to even speed up in order to finish the rest of this. So we're going to dive in and talk about the next category, which is connecting to Office services to build smarter device and web apps. And I'll hand it over to Tristan for
great.
That one.
Sitting here trying to figure out what I did wrong with Git. It's going to bug me for like, yes. So talking about building smarter apps. So folks, how many folks here have heard about something called the Microsoft Graph? Is that pretty familiar to most of the room? Awesome. So I won't spend too much time on it, but the Microsoft Graph is really about having our unified API for accessing all the data intelligence up there in the Microsoft Cloud, right? So we've got a great unified API. We'll have a bunch of SDKs that'll let you access that API with your language of choice. We do a bunch of single sign-on with Azure Active Directory and MSA, so you can go and build apps that call the same API and access either consumer or commercial data based on the context of your users. We give you tons of data, right? We give you not just access to Exchange and Azure Active Directory and OneNote and OneDrive, even more as you'll see in the next couple demos. And then we give you access to a ton of intelligence, like things like, hey, given a specific user, who are the people they work with, right? Answering the question of who do I work with most isn't a simple question. It's a, well, who do I have meetings with, and who do I trade email with, and who am I editing documents with? And we're able to take all those signals from your users using Office and turn them into super simple, intelligent APIs that you can go and access to get things like what documents are important to this user, you know, who do they work with, what's their OOF status, if they want to schedule a meeting with Rob and Gina and Ryan, what's the best time to go and schedule that meeting? So really a bunch of ability for us to take all the data and intelligence we're gathering and help you as developers make use of that in your own applications. Really cool stuff. So in terms of announcements, tons of cool stuff. First one is support for hybrid environments. I think this one is incredibly cool, which is, hey, if you're using Office 365 and you've moved all of your workloads up into the cloud, the graph is awesome, but what if you haven't? What if you still have an Exchange server that you run on-premise? What you're going to see is a preview that lets you not have to take that Exchange server and bring it up into our cloud, but you can actually hook up in a hybrid world to, hey, I want to use all those graph apps, I want to use that graph API, but I don't want to move my mailbox and my Exchange server off of on-prem. Well, we can make that work. So we'll kind of show that. Webhook support, so one of the things I hear probably requested more than anything else is notifications. I just want to know when things are changing, right? So we'll take to GA support for notifications, webhooks on mail, calendar, and contacts entities, and then we'll announce in preview OneDrive files and folders, and then you'll also see support for SharePoint webhooks on lists and libraries. That's not yet on Graph, but it's coming pretty darn soon. More APIs. Some of you probably saw this summer that we announced a GA of what we call the Excel REST API, which is taking that calculation engine, that brain of Excel, and turning it into a set of RESTful APIs that you can call that are not just super powerful, but are also symmetric with all that JavaScript stuff that I showed in the last section. We've also GA'd OpenType extensions for Outlook entities, so you can attach your own data on top of a mail, a calendar, a contact, all those Outlook entities. And then in preview, we've also got a whole bunch of cool new stuff. So in Outlook, you can actually access mail tips, right? So if you've used modern Outlook, if you used a recent version of Outlook, you've probably seen that Outlook will tell you things like, that guy you're about to email, he's oof, and here's his oof message. Now through the API, you'll both get the semantic information about the state of that user, that they're not in the office, and the message so that you can pull that message through to your own custom app as well. We'll also give you the online meeting URL for any Outlook meeting that is actually a link or Skype meeting, so that's really cool. We'll have SharePoint lists and libraries APIs on Graph, so that's pretty awesome, super common request. We'll have support for file handlers, so handlers for custom file types in both SharePoint and OneDrive. And then on top of Azure Active Directory, support for administrative units, support for identity protection and dynamic groups. So if you work with AAD, a bunch of that context and capabilities of AAD are now available to programmatically access through the Graph as well. And then tons of client libraries. So I mentioned we really do want you to be able to access Graph through your language of choice, right? Like, I don't want you to feel like, hey, I gotta choose .NET in order to access Graph. We'll have a great GA library for .NET. We've also got a GA library for Android, and then preview libraries for Python, Ruby, JavaScript, and Node.js. So you can kind of choose what language are you most comfortable with, and we'll have a great first-class client library for you to access the Graph from that language.
Okay, there's some awesome stuff in there. The SharePoint lists and libraries in the Graph, does anybody think that's cool?
There you go.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, so now we're going to jump in and do a bunch more demos around the Graph, and we'll go through
yes.
these super fast because we got to get on time. We want to make sure you see them all.
So let's start with hybrid. This is one that gets me really excited. So here I am. You can see that I'm connecting to an Exchange server that's not up in Office 365. So we've got our own Exchange server here. I'm Lincoln. I'm going to log in. And you can see that it's just connecting to my company's Exchange server and Lincoln's inbox, so nothing super exciting there. Where that gets really interesting, like I mentioned, is now I can just go, let's go to the Graph documentation site. So if any of you haven't seen this, if you just go to graph.microsoft.com, that's where we have all our docs and code samples. The other thing we have is what we call Graph Explorer, so it just lets me run queries against the graph. You can see I'm already logged in as Lincoln, so let's go and just run that same graph query I might run for an Office 365 user for Lincoln and see what I get back. So you can see if I call messages, the graph is returning all that same data. So Lincoln's top thing, hello from graph 21, that's what's being returned as the very first item from that graph call. So now I've got my Exchange mailbox, which is hosted on-prem, piping through the Graph API, so all those graph apps that get built can access the content of that mailbox as well. I can do the same thing for events, right? So suddenly, the power of the graph is available to not just those of you who are fully on cloud, but those of you who are hybrid environments as well. For the initial preview, this will be just Exchange, but you can imagine that we'll want to take all the workloads that you might possibly have on-prem and expose them to Graph in the very same way. So, really exciting stuff.
It's not like we did anything to the Graph Explorer to make it understand how to do this. This is just the Graph Explorer, as it's always been, can now connect to on-prem as well because of this hybrid support. So, really cool. One of the things we wanted to do is just show you really quickly one of the applications that our partners are building on top of the graph. We've got a new partner called Hyperfish. They're actually in the demo hall today. They actually asked me to share that they're in booth 852 if you want to check it out. They've got a really cool application that takes a special advantage of the graph in a couple of ways. And I'll switch over and just show you a really quick demo of it. So I'm logged into the Hyperfish application with a demo account. Oops, that's the wrong one. I'm logged into the Hyperfish application with a demo account. What Hyperfish does is they use the Microsoft Graph and the Active Directory APIs to take a look at your organization, your tenant, and to look for things that are not right, things that haven't been configured, missing information, and to automatically create a report for you on that. So you can see here they're telling me that 62% of the basic information for my tenant is missing. They've got it broken down by things like managers and reports, position details, organization details, location details, profile pictures. For those of you who are familiar with how we actually store a bunch of this data, a lot of it's actually in different systems. So that profile picture is stored in your Exchange mailbox. The manager is stored inside of Azure Active Directory. But because of things like the graph, it allows them to go to one place and get data across all of these different systems and then create this single report that tells you where are the problems in your organization's data and how do you go and fix it. So really powerful stuff there. But the really cool stuff happens when they can then take the data and the context and the intelligence in the graph and start to make recommendations on how to fix it. So you've got a bunch of missing data or incorrect data. And for example, if I go to Ann Wallace's profile here, you'll see that on top of the mobile phone, they've actually got a little suggestion. And for those of you who can't read it in the back, it says update to, and it's got a new phone number. And then it says found an Outlook signature, and it says yes, no. So we're actually able to take all these different signals from the graph, things like your Outlook signature, things like who are the people that you work with and what does their department say? So that might be a good signal for what your department should be. And they use that to generate a bunch of suggestions that make filling in the data that's missing inside of your tenant really seamless. So the application is connecting to the graph, it's using the intelligence, it's using the context there in exactly the way that we would like people to do it, which is to make it smarter, to make people more productive based on that data. Okay, so now we're going to switch and do another demo. This one is one of my favorite features that we're releasing here at Ignite this year, called SharePoint Lists and Sites in the Microsoft Graph. I really do think that this is awesome. I'm an old school SharePoint developer by history, and having it there in the graph alongside all of the other services is kind of transformational for me. So I'm actually going to switch over, and I'm going to show you a quick application. This is a simple SharePoint list. It's in a site called Facilities Team Site. You'll see there's a list there called Entry Log. We've actually got on the table here a Raspberry Pi in this nifty Lego blue case. You can come up and ask Ryan where he got it afterwards. And it's got a USB card reader attached to it. And I've got a card here. If I swipe the card, what's going to happen is it'll read, it'll then connect to the Microsoft Graph and use the information in the Microsoft Graph to write a new entry to this SharePoint list. It doesn't have to figure out what tenant you're in or anything like that because it's all part of graph.microsoft.com. It allows you to navigate through those sites to find the right list by an identifier and then to go post information inside of it. You'll see that the entry times are a little bit off because getting a Raspberry Pi to understand the right entry time is kind of difficult. But you'll see that if I hit refresh, a new one is then created based on that information. Picking the right card so you can see it's actually Rob H instead of Ryan Gregg, so that it knows the right user, and it's all done through the graph. And in a session later this week, Ryan's going to walk through exactly how to build that and how to make those calls and some cool web parts that they'll build to connect to it as well. So there's a really cool kind of end-to-end demo that you can check out based on this a little bit later in the week. The last capability that I want to show really quickly is an update to the OneDrive file handler. So we released in preview a while ago a file handler for OneDrive that let you put support for custom file types into OneDrive and SharePoint. We've actually updated that file handler to connect it to the graph directly, so it's much more capable, it's much faster, it allows you to do more things. And you'll see here, Tristan talked about Markdown. We use Markdown everywhere. A bunch of our documentation is based on it. In addition to storing them in GitHub, you put Markdown files all over the place, including in OneDrive, but OneDrive doesn't natively understand a Markdown file. And so we've now got a capability to extend OneDrive, and you'll see this new open with Markdown render for Office 365, which is a custom Azure website application that Ryan built. If I select one of these Markdown files, you'll see that it automatically understands that this is associated with that file type. If I click open with Markdown render, you'll see that it launches his application, it bootstraps the authentication. I should have refreshed this so I had a login token. But then it logs into his application and you'll see that Markdown file rendered. I can click edit in browser. It'll switch over to an edit session and now I have his custom application to edit this Markdown file. I can make changes, I can hit save. Because it's connected to the graph, I can do a bunch of other really cool things that I couldn't do before. Like I can rename the file, I can get a link to the file. I can even go back to OneDrive and I can do if I deselect that one, I can say new file, and you'll see Markdown text file listed there because OneDrive now knows how to create Markdown text files by invoking that new file handler based on the graph. So some really cool capabilities, and you can check out, again, Ryan's session later in the week in order to see the details of how to build those. Okay, so some whirlwind demos related to the graph. Let's talk again about going forward and what we're working on for next in the graph.
Sure. So obviously, I alluded to this earlier, but we want to bring that hybrid support to more workloads. So we started with Exchange, but you might have SharePoint servers that are also running on-prem. So we'll want to be able to connect all that data through the graph as well, through the same mechanism we're using for Exchange. Additional workloads and new APIs, we're constantly growing the set of things you can do through the Microsoft Graph. Right? You saw that long list of new capabilities we brought, Excel and SharePoint and the AAD additions. We'll continue to bring more workloads and new APIs on board as well. We'll continue to have broader support for webhooks. So you saw that we're adding OneDrive files and folders as a support for webhooks, but we want to bring that notifications capability everywhere. So if there's anything you want to watch, right? If you want to watch a user, you want to watch a group in Azure Active Directory, we want you to have notifications on all of those pieces as well. And then I want to finish the client library support for more platforms, right? Like, I want a PHP library. I want to bring all of those libraries in preview to GA. So we'll continue to push really hard as a team to make sure you have first-class development tools, regardless of what language of choice you choose to use to access the graph. And then deeper data extensibility. You saw me allude to the fact that you can attach data to Outlook entities today, right? So I can take an Outlook mail and attach my own little payload to say, hey, here's some specific data about that for me and my application. I want you to be able to do that to all the entities in the graph, and I want you to be able to add your own. Like, eventually we want Graph to not just be a home for first-party Microsoft entities like mail, calendar, contacts, files, users, groups. I want you to be able to say, hey, here's a product, and I want that to be represented in Graph, and I want that to have relationships to those entities, and I want Graph to not just be a composite piece of our data, but a composite of your data and ours living together in sort of one structured graph environment. So you'll see us pushing towards that pretty aggressively as well. Set of sessions. So I would definitely, if you're interested in Graph, tomorrow morning is the Access the Graph API to Supercharge Your Line of Business App session, where some folks on the team will go really deep on the Microsoft Graph API and really talk about all the capabilities we touched on today. We'll have a session specifically on intelligence in the Graph APIs and how you can access all those insights and intelligence that we bake in based on all the data we're collecting on users and usage. On Wednesday, we'll have a specific Excel workbooks as a service section. So the Excel REST APIs are a piece of Graph that's super near and dear to my heart because it takes one of the most powerful applications in the world and turns it into a set of APIs that you can use, building on that Excel calculation engine. We'll talk more about hybrid. We'll have a session specifically on that hybrid work for Graph and what that means. We'll have a session on the Outlook REST APIs, going really deep on those on Thursday. We'll spend more time on those SharePoint sites and lists APIs that Rob showed in that Raspberry Pi demo. We'll have a great session on building Xamarin apps, so using Xamarin to build cross-platform mobile apps that talk to Graph, and how the combination of Xamarin and Graph is really a pretty awesome, powerful combination to build mobile apps for your enterprise. And then on Friday, we'll talk about the OneDrive and Microsoft Graph APIs together and all the things you can do with that. So definitely a long and interesting set of sessions if you want to spend some time digging into each part of the graph and all the cool stuff we've got to talk about there.
The one on Friday is the one to go see if you want to see how to do a file handler in particular. Cool, so we're going to go into the last section, and this is on that kind of next generation of productivity solutions, things that use voice and video, things that leverage connectors and create bots that allow people to be productive in new ways. One of the things that we started talking about build is this notion, talking about at build this year, this last April, is this notion of conversations as a platform. Which is a really cool idea. It's basically the idea that rather than having people go to bespoke apps or websites in order to interact with your service, if you can actually come to them and interact with them in natural language, there's a whole new platform that can emerge. And it's actually really, really cool as an extensible user interface because everybody knows how to speak or knows how to write. That's a universal thing that everybody can do. And it's also universal in terms of the form factor that it fits. If you think about it, natural language is one of those things that works on your phone, it works on your PC, works on your refrigerator or your car. Everything can understand natural language, whether that's written or speech. And so being able to create applications that help people be more productive based on that written language, based on understanding the semantics of it, is a really powerful notion. And in particular, Microsoft, and in particular Office, have a bunch of assets that are really important, especially for business productivity discussions, business productivity conversations. If you think about Outlook and Skype for Business, those are two places where a huge portion of the business conversations in the world happen on a daily basis. So it's really critical that we bring those to bear and allow people to take advantage of these new movements there. And we have a variety of announcements related to this kind of area. The first is in voice and video conversations. We have a couple of SDKs, the Skype Web SDK and the Skype for Business App SDK, that allow you to take voice and video and embed them in your own applications, whether you're building a web application or an iOS or an Android application. You can take your application and imbue it with conversations powered by Skype for Business. And we've got an update to those. We're moving towards GA, and we continue to add both new functionality and more polish to those SDKs. We're also investing in something we call smart messages or actionable messages. We talked at Build about this notion of connectors, which allow you to take third-party services and connect them to group conversations so that you could take data in those third-party services and have conversations around them. We're now making those same connectors available in the inbox. So that same infrastructure allows you as an individual to connect to these services and have one place in your inbox to track all of those connections. And we'll do a little bit of a demo of that. In addition, we took the set of actions that those connectors can have, and we've enriched them. So it's not just a deep link into something, but you can actually complete a full loop. You can complete full actions within those connectors. And I'll demo exactly what that looks like. And you can do that not just from connectors, but from regular mails too. So if you've got an application that generates mails or sends people SMTP mails or mails through REST, you can actually now decorate those mails with some JSON that teaches that application, here are the actions that a user can perform, and lets them complete them right from inline inside of that email. And we'll do a demo on that as well. Lastly, we are continuing to invest in this notion of bots and agents, which I think is the first thing that people sort of think of when you think of conversations as a platform. It's kind of the most eye-catching demo there. And we've now got some APIs that allow you to do deeper integration between bots and sort of cloud service applications and Skype for Business. And there's a talk later in the week on that trusted app API and the preview that we've got going there. We also continue to update the Microsoft Bot Framework, which is kind of a platform and host agnostic framework for building these bots, for understanding natural language, and then plugging these bots into a variety of different experiences, not just our own experiences, but also things like Facebook chat. So let's do a few demos here on first starting with actionable messages in O365 connectors. And I'll switch over and I'll show you an existing connector that we have. So I'm inside of a group that Tristan and I set up to manage all the demos we're doing here. We got quite a few of them. And I've actually connected it to a Trello board. And if I switch over to the Trello board, you can see we've got a bunch of different demos that we kind of tracked from ideas to things we confirmed and then things we finally completed. And as we made those changes, you can see that I've configured a connector so that I'm automatically creating conversations when those changes happen. And they show up not just in this group, but they also get synchronized to our inbox as well. So we get those messages. When Tristan makes a change, I can see, hey, we actually moved this Hyperfish thing from a demo idea to a confirmed demo. One of the really cool capabilities that we added, in addition to making these work not just on groups, but your inbox, is this notion of actionable messages inside these connectors. And what you'll see here is that this Ignite Talk board is telling me that Rob Howard moved card Hyperfish to demo ideas and confirm demos. But more importantly, it's offering me four different actions that I can take on this card. One of them is not that interesting. The view one is just going to deep link me back into Trello so I can actually see that card there. But set due date, move, and comment are really cool, because they're not just deep linking me, they're letting me complete an action completely from within this web interface. So I can hit set due date, and I can pick a due date here, and I can hit save, and it will actually write all the way back through to Trello in order to make that change. I can do the same for move. So I want to move this card. It shouldn't be in confirmed demos. It should actually be all the way in completed demos. We just did it a minute ago. So I'll choose completed demos and I'll hit submit. And it'll actually make the request directly from within this web page. It doesn't have to do a deep link or take me to some other service in order to interact with it. And I can do the same sort of thing by creating a new comment on the card. And you'll see if I go back over to Trello and I refresh Trello, if I get my function key right, then you'll see that actually the card did move over into that right-hand completed demo side. So it allows you to create really intelligent interactions that allow people to stay just inside of that group or just inside of the inbox and interact with a variety of services and really make this the hub that they can have all of the conversations that they need to around these actions and complete actions related to them. The next one I want to show you, it's on the same machine. The next one I want to show you is a really cool, just kind of gratuitous tech demo. I love this demo. And this is just taking a couple of different really cool pieces of technology that we have as Microsoft and kind of mashing them together. So Tristan talked about the Excel REST API, which lets you access Excel as a service. And this allows you to go and access Excel workbooks. Yina's really upset with me because she's got a great talk on this tomorrow, and I'm just going to show a little bit of it. So you should still go to Yina's talk. So I'm going to open in my OneDrive this loan workbook, loan.xlsx. And this workbook is rendering in Excel online, and I can actually switch over and say edit in the browser. And when I do this, it's going to enter an edit session in the browser. And you can see that this workbook just has a kind of calculation for, based on this principal, based on this interest rate, what are all the loan payments that I have. And you can see it's got a nice table of the payments. It's got a chart here that renders what those payments look like over time. And if I go over here to ExcelBot, I can say hi. And the first thing ExcelBot is going to want me to do is to log in. And it's going to generate me a unique URL that I can click. It's going to bootstrap here, oh, this user clicked this URL, and I'm grabbing the identity. So now it knows who I am. And if I come back and say hi again, it should say, hi, Rob. And then I can say, look at loan. And it's going to interpret that to say, hey, use the Microsoft graph to go look in the user's OneDrive and find a workbook called loan.xlsx. So it should find loan and says, OK, we're ready to work with loan calculator. You see it found the worksheet there. And I can then say, what is the value of C4? And you can see it's actually going to interpret that as a command in Excel REST, and it's going to go and find C4 and actually pull that value back. So it's using the Microsoft Bot framework to understand that request, and it's using the Excel REST API to actually go and fulfill that request. One of the really cool things, all the Excel people are saying, hey, you can't reference it by cell, so I can say, what are the names in the workbook? And it will come back and say, here are all the named ranges that are defined in the workbook. And you'll see things like interest rate. So I can then, of course, say, OK, set interest rate to, let's go really low. Let's go 1%. That would be nice, huh? And you'll actually see, I'm now in an edit session. So I've actually got this workbook actually, sort of locked in OneDrive, right? I've got it inside of an edit session. It shouldn't actually be able to make that update. But one of the really cool things about the Excel REST API is it supports co-authoring. So the bot is, in effect, going to join a co-authoring session with this Excel workbook. And it will update it while I'm in here. And then I can continue to make queries. So I can say things like, what is the value of total loan cost? If I get the capitalization right. And you can see, while I was doing that, it actually updated it in real time. So I now have the new value inside of my running workbook. And you can see that the total loan cost value was updated based on the change in the interest rate. And of course, I can do things like, what are the charts in the workbook? And I can say, show me chart 2. I'm in trouble with caps today. Oh, fail. Well, what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to actually embed an image of this chart if I go do that. You can see it's just a tech demo, but there's really cool possibilities here. If you think about the combination of bots and the services that we have in the graph and the data intelligence that you can get to, some really, really cool capabilities that you can build. So hopefully that gives you an idea of the types of experiences. We're going to switch over and do I think one last demo.
Yeah.
The last one?
So the last thing I wanted to show you really quick is, so we've shown you a ton of capabilities inside of Office, right? You can add add-ins to the applications with the new web add-in framework. You can extend SharePoint with the new SharePoint framework. You can hit Microsoft Graph. I want to show you how you can take all those capabilities and integrate with some of the other awesome stuff we're doing as a company. Power Apps and Flow kind of stand out as great biz apps experiences. We won't talk about Power Apps just for time, although there's some great sessions on Power Apps this week. But let's show you how you can take the combination of SharePoint and Microsoft Flow and that actionable message capability that Rob showed you to do some really interesting and simple approval stuff. So right next to that demos list that Rob just showed, we have another one about presentations. So I'm going to go and say, hey, here's a list of presentations. I'm going to go add a new one and say, hey, maybe I want to present at Ignite. So let me go and add that to the list. and say, hey, I want to present at Ignite. I think I want to do that today. So I'll go and make a request to do that. And save it. And what's happening behind the scenes is that we've got a Microsoft Flow hooked up to this SharePoint list, right? So that Rob and I can see when people ask to go and do presentations, and we can make decisions about whether or not we want to allow that. So here's the flows we've got going on. We've created a really simple approval workflow on top of that list. So let's go and see what that looks like. So what it is a flow that says, hey, every time a new item is created in SharePoint, it'll load in a second, let's go and send an approval email off to see whether or not that person can go and do that presentation. And that will use the actionable messages functionality Rob just showed in the Trello context to go and send me an email and say, hey, do you approve or reject this person going to that presentation? And then based on that, I can write there inside of Outlook, approve or reject that message, and then it'll either mark it approved in the list, or maybe it'll send a message back to the person who submitted it saying it's been rejected, you should probably follow up and figure out why. So let's try that again. Well, that's thinking, let's go to the third part. Let's open up Outlook to see that approval mail that came through while it's loading up. There we go. So you can see this workflow is just as I described. When a new item is created in SharePoint in our presentations list, go and send an approval email to me with an approve and reject button. And then based on whether or not that decision was approved or not, either, hey, go and update the item and send an email that it was approved, or just send an email saying it was rejected, right? Super simple business logic that any IW could go and author to go and do that. But now I've got that combination of that SharePoint list, that actionable message in Outlook, to create a really awesome approval process without having to write any code. So if I jump over to Outlook here, you'll see that, besides the fact that I have too much email, there's already a message in my inbox saying, hey, somebody wanted to present at Ignite, do you approve or reject? And I can say approve, like Rob showed, that's happening right inside the context of Outlook, so I'm not breaking my flow if I'm doing a ton of email by having to shell out to a separate application. It's been registered, and then immediately Flow will pick up on that approval, and it'll send the mail saying, hey, presentation approved, and if I were to jump all the way back to this guy, you'll see that we've actually augmented that item by adding dash approved to the title. So really awesome example of how you can mash up all the capabilities of the graph, all the capabilities of actionable message inside of Outlook to create really awesome experiences using Microsoft Flow. So pretty cool stuff.
Okay, phew, we got through them all. We have 1 minute left. We'll go really fast through what's going forward here. You can see connectors and actionable messages are a really cool capability in Outlook Web Access. We're gonna bring them up to a lot more clients and not just other Outlook clients. We'll certainly support them all over Outlook, but look forward to over the next couple months seeing connectors and actionable messages show up in a bunch of other places inside of the Office ecosystem as well. We're also going to take bots and agents and make them a deeper part of a bunch more canvases. You can imagine doing things like connecting connectors to bots and agents and some of these emails, making them easier to connect to bots and agents in order to create these more seamless productivity experiences. We're doing more and more to improve the Skype Web and App SDK, to improve the stability, to improve the functionality, to improve the plugins that it uses in order to make them not require downloads, things like that. And we'll get to GA here very soon. We're also working on supporting new trusted cloud communication services in Skype for Business. So we've got a new set of APIs that allow you to do things like create call centers and bots that integrate with Skype for Business online in really deep ways. And there's a session later in the week to check out there. In particular, there's a session on the Skype SDKs on Wednesday. We've got also got one that dives into actionable mails and connectors on Wednesday. On Thursday, we'll talk about that trusted application API in Skype for Business Online that allows you to do things like call centers and bots in Skype for Business. And then on Thursday, we'll also have a session specifically on Power Apps, Microsoft Flow, and Office 365, and how you can create a bunch of business applications using that. So, we finished. Hopefully you guys got a good idea of all the different stuff that we're going to be talking about this week. You got a good list of sessions you want to go check out. I hope it was useful for you. Please do go and join the Office Developer Program. If you haven't already, go to dev.office.com. Follow us on Twitter. We make a bunch of announcements on Office Dev at Twitter if you want to stay up to date on all these things as we go forward. We've got a hackathon coming in hackproductivity.devpost.com if you want to go and register for that. It's a worldwide virtual hackathon for the next 3 months. We have some very cool stuff going on there. And please do provide feedback to us on user voice. This is really critical. If it didn't come across today, the only way that we figure out what to go do next is based on your feedback. So please do take the time and let us know what's missing, what do you need, and what do you like. Thanks a lot, guys. I hope this was useful for you. Have a great rest of Ignite.
Thanks.